round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You got a whole lot of work to do to top the opening go-around of the 2021 NHL postseason. Some shocking upsets, and the biggest, both coming from the North. Dominic Moore, longtime NHLer, called both the Edmonton dismissal and the Toronto Maple Leafs seven-game loss to the Montreal Canadiens on NBCSN. He will join me to talk about the history that he watched firsthand. And on the subject of history, my new good friend, Megan Duggan, making a little bit of her own with the New Jersey Devils. It's all in the Chirp with Darren Millard. Next.
Really growing on me, Stammer. Really starting to grow on me.
That's a disgrace! That's a disgrace! What a joke!
You guys are sensitive over there.
Hey, from the studios of the Chirp podcast in downtown Las Vegas. Well, we're about a couple minutes, just a couple minutes away from the Strip. Triple-digit temperatures in Vegas for the first time as we head into June. It's that time of the year, but we still have a long way to go with the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks for joining us. As always, hit that like button, rate us, make sure that you're giving us some feedback. Let us know what we can work on, what you'd like to hear more of, and if there's anything that we can do to make your experience just a little bit more enjoyable. We are here for you. That is literally the only reason why I'm here. Megan Duggan, she of the New Jersey Devils, Megan Duggan, is on the pod today. Gold medal hanging nicely on the wall. Now it's the chase of the Stanley Cup that occupies Megan's time. We will catch up with Megs right after we dissect what happened up north, which may take a couple of minutes. Winnipeg and Montreal are both through to the second round, the third and the fourth seeds completing upsets. So Edmonton gone in a sweep, and now it's Toronto bounced in seven games by the Montreal Canadiens, who came back from a 3-1 deficit. And that's an important fact that we'll hit on a couple of times with our guest, Dominic Moore. He played a bunch of years in the National Hockey League. And I'm talking about a bunch of years in the National Hockey League because he can't even remember some of his goals. I'm kidding about that. So Dom's a great resource because in NBCSN's coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs this year, Dom has been granted an opportunity to both do some studio work between periods, pre and post game, as well as call some of the action. He worked the Winnipeg series and that sweep of the Connor McDavid-led Edmonton Oilers, and then he skipped over and called his team that he grew up watching. Like, we're talking the Toronto Maple Leafs of Doug Gilmore and Dave Andrejuk and Felix Potvin, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, who he also played for. So what an interesting situation that is. He played for both Montreal and Toronto, and they went the distance. He's a Toronto guy, and he was right in the middle of it, calling game seven of two original six franchises. I call it a spectacle. Here's Dom Moore on the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard. So pretty cool that you get to call a seventh game between Montreal and Toronto, and now you've got the North Division final, Dom. But let's start way back when, because I was thinking you played a lot of years. You spanned like that lost season, so you go back that far. First goal and last goal that you ever scored. Who's the first goal and then the last goal?
Oh, gosh. The first goal was against Montreal. My first game was against Montreal as well. I didn't score. I had three assists in my first game. Montreal always seemed to be the team I played my best games against. And so first game was at the Bell Center against Montreal. Had three assists that night. And then my first goal against Montreal was at MSG as when I was with the Rangers. And then
who the goalie was?
I think it was Theodore.
Nice.
So... And then my most memorable goal of my career was against Montreal, which was game six of the conference finals to get us into the final. And then last goal I ever scored was with Toronto 2018. But honestly, I can't remember.
Nobody ever remembers their last goal. It's bizarre how that that happens. I'm just going to look it up right now.
Because you always think you're going to get one.
You're going to get. That's exactly what everybody says is you're going to get more. It was late in the season against Florida.
Can't even picture it. Wow.
Really?
Yeah, I can't. I'm trying to forget that season, to be honest.
you Everybody around there should have got some kind of honorarium, like lifetime honorariums on that team. I always go back to that those days. So you've got Winnipeg and you've got Montreal. I'm still trying to get my head around that in the North Division final. Ooh, do you see any? Because you called that Edmonton series against Winnipeg, and then you had the great experience of being able to take us through Montreal and Toronto. How do they stack up, the two teams?
I think they stack up pretty evenly, to be honest. I think it's going to be a heck of a series. Two goaltenders that are elite. Yeah. I'm obviously Carey has a longer track record of playoffs to go on, but you know, you hear the way Hellebuck's talking about 2018 as a learning experience and how focused he is. I think he's going to play great. So you start with that, and then I feel like forward depth, I'd give a little bit more on the bottom six to Montreal, but I'd give a little bit more on the top six to Winnipeg. Both coaches, I think, outcoached their opponents in round one. And I'm excited to see kind of how they think about their matchups and stuff in this round. But I was really impressed with Paul Maurice, the way, you know, Winnipeg had some growing pains down the stretch, right? And they were losing games. And I feel like it was Paul Maurice's attempt to get them playing more of a playoff style. And they lost games in the process. But here we go in the playoffs, and they sweep Edmonton the way they did. It was really impressive.
There's panic in Winnipeg, and now there's euphoria, and they get home ice advantage. I'm not sure how there's been a quicker turnaround that we've seen.
Yeah, it's like the night before the playoffs, they decided they were going to turn it on. And they say you can't do that, but Winnipeg did. And it was really impressive to see, like, contributions from everyone. I mean, you know, Nate Thompson, you know, with a great defensive play that I think it was game one that set up the goal. I think he ended up having two assists. Guys like Logan Stanley, I thought, looked really good, you know, defensively. And Pionk.
Composed, right? Like, Stanley was composed. He was physical.
Big time. And then the block from DeMello, that was a big moment in that series. And just so many contributions at big times. That's what you need in playoffs. And it's not that different with Montreal, right? Like, you've got the veterans. Corey Perry played a big role in, you know, scoring some big goals and providing that leadership. And then you had the young guys, Caulfield and Suzuki in overtime, and Kotkaniemi in overtime. So I think that's kind of what you need in the playoffs, is those little contributions from everywhere. And Edmonton and Toronto weren't built that way. So I think this round, these two teams stack up pretty well. I think it's going to be a fun series to watch.
You'd think you get to the second round as a three seed or a four seed, and you might be intimidated going to the next. Well, that's out the window, because they just both slay dragons. I don't know. They should feel like loose and free.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on teams that have come back from 3-1 down in the series. And actually, I've been on teams that, four different times that have done that. And when you do that, you have such a, like, you know, nothing to lose mentality. You're just flying high because you were pretty much out. Yeah. Right. And now you're just playing with house money. You're in Vegas. You know this better than anyone, but you got this, like, hey, we've already been eliminated, and yet here we're still alive, and let's just play and have fun. And I feel like that carried Montreal in game seven. And so I have, I think, a little bit of an edge for them coming out of the gate, even though they might be a little bit more fatigued. But Winnipeg has to be flying high, and they're well-rested. So, you know, it's going to be a tough one to predict.
Your great point about Paul and what he did to his team down the stretch. And Dominic takes over midway through the season, and he puts his fingerprints on the team. Does either club have an edge physically in this series?
Well, I think I would give the edge on the defensive side. You know, I feel like Montreal does an unbelievable job in front of their own net. Guys like Sherratt and Weber and Edmondson, they're good at clearing out traffic. They're not afraid to use the lumber. And they actually kind of got them in trouble a little bit early in the series with Toronto. They were a little bit too aggressive that way, but I felt like Toronto kept trying to, you know, penetrate the net front, and they just had no success doing that. It was just, everything was getting blocked. When it did get through, Price was there. Price could see quite a bit. So I think their physical presence defensively is there, but I think Winnipeg's forwards, I think, have a little bit more of a physical edge to them. And, you know, there's some bigger bodies up there. So I would give the edge to them on the front end.
I think Edmondson's a Manitoba guy too. So that'll be interesting going back there. The idea of, they were both kind of built for the U.S. divisions, not really for that wide open thing. So I'm like, how do you think both of them managed to pull off these incredible performances?
Oh man, that's a long answer, I think, because it gets into, you know, talking about the teams that lost, which may be more of the conversation. But in terms of Winnipeg and Montreal, I think for Winnipeg, it starts with, I felt like the matchups were, you know, Dave Tippett had used McDavid and Draisaitl most of the season on separate lines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he put them together at various points in games and for a couple small stretches during the season. But after game one, he put them together and they stayed together as a super line the rest of the series. And I can't fault Tippett for doing that because he needed to get those guys going. But at the same time, I felt like that really handicapped, you know, the rest of the lineup up front, and they just could not match up against what Winnipeg had going at them in their kind of line matchup. So that to me was a turning point in the series because McDavid and Draisaitl were shut down early. He had to kind of go to plan B. And once plan B was in effect, it got away from them. In terms of the Leafs, oh boy, where do we start? I didn't even know.
Way back in 2004, Dom, they actually won a couple of series, but man.
Well, let's start talking about Montreal first with that. And you have to hand it to Philippe Deneau and Brendan Gallagher. And then, you know, it was Jake Evans towards the end of the series, but Tatar earlier in the series, but those guys did a great job. Everybody kept saying, you know, you read every article the next morning after the game, oh, Leafs dominated possession. Leafs dominated possession. Matthews and Marner had X amount of shots. It's a matter of time. It's a matter of time. Guess what? The series is over.
Yeah.
And Montreal won, and those guys shut them down. And not only that, Gallagher got the go-ahead goal in game seven. So say what we want about it was a matter of time and the Leafs were the better team. Those guys got the job done. And obviously the contrast between Price and Campbell, and, you know, I don't want to get too aggressive on Campbell because, you know, I don't think this is on him at the end of the day.
No.
But Price was phenomenal. We all know that. And there was definitely a difference in quality there. And the Leafs, I think, did a really good job of protecting Campbell in games 2 through 4. I looked at some of the, you know, the numbers that I was able to dig up from the software that tracks it. And there was one grade A scoring chance total for Montreal, between games 2 and 4. So the Leafs protected Campbell in those 3 games. And then Montreal finally got to him towards the end of the series.
I looked at some of their numbers. Kevin Woodley over at Ingle magazine does some great work. And he said it was like Price and Campbell were playing 2 different series. Like, you would never have guessed that they were opposing each other. The amount of chances were diametrically opposite.
Yeah. And it's funny, right? Because at first glance, you looked at the save percentage, whatever, and Campbell looked like he was having a good series, but the quality of chances was not there for the most part. And, you know, the quality of chances that Carey was facing, especially, you know, like those pivotal moments, they were point blank opportunities, breakaways from Zach Hyman almost every game, that he stoned them on every single one.
So Toronto tries this year to go with the old guys, which I thought was great because they get some incredible production out of the likes of Joe and Jason was awesome. They were both in the power play. Wayne was good, but that didn't work. I don't know what they do now. I honestly, everybody keeps asking today, what's the next? I don't know.
Yeah. There's a long pause here because I don't at a loss for words. It seemed reactive, right? Everything seemed reactive from year to year in terms of, okay, this is why it didn't work this year. Let's do this going into next year. Oh, this is why it didn't work this year. Let's do this going into next year. And to a certain degree, yeah, that's how you kind of have to tinker. We look at Tampa, they get swept. They kind of go back to the drawing board. They don't blow it up. They figure out, okay, what was it? But I think that what was it is the real question. You have to diagnose accurately what your defects are, what the things you are that you need to shore up. And they haven't been able to do that. And this year, you're right. Like, I thought Jason Spezza was one of the best Leafs, not only in the regular season, but in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The stats bear that out. I was a bit bewildered, to be honest, that they didn't elevate him earlier. You know, Tavares goes out. You've got Kerfoot, who was playing really well, actually, but he had trouble winning draws. So the effect that had was they kept throwing Matthews out to take these own draws. That reduced Nylander's ice time, where he was playing well.
Yeah.
So it had this domino effect, whereas I felt like you just put Spezza up there on the second line, move Kerfoot to the left wing with Nylander and Spezza, and your problems are kind of solved. And, you know, there's a trickle down effect the other way too, where I felt like that would also help the other line. So I don't know. These are the questions that guys like me and you get to ask. But the fact is, the Leaf fans and the fans that have been watching this series have every right to ask these questions, because this one was probably, as a lot of people are saying, the most epic collapse of them all.
It was the most expected epic collapse of all, like, because it's been over and over, and you and I have both witnessed. Well, you've been played for the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, you grew up there, and having worked there, it's bizarre. We take coaches for granted in the media, because when teams go great, we go, they're sort of massaging, but the players do the work. These two series where Edmonton and Toronto both fall out, I mean, we can point to coaching decisions that we feel weren't necessarily the right decisions.
We can, you know, I think in Tippett's situation, I felt like he was a bit handcuffed. He had no choice but to try to put those guys together.
Yeah.
You know, in order to get them going. If they didn't get going, they had no chance at all.
No chance anyway. So, right. Yeah,
exactly. So I feel like on that side, I don't criticize that decision the way he made it. I think, you know, the way his team was built, the lines that he had, the players he had available, I'm not sure, you know, there was any better way to do it. In Toronto's case, the biggest thing that I felt was, especially when you know, it's a mindset thing, especially when you get into the closing out a series situation, the mindset of the team and the players going into that is such an important thing. And you know, you don't close him out. Okay, fine. But, you know, game seven, you know, I felt like was the worst part of this whole collapse that you're saying, because you still had a chance to come out and get the job done. And it was their worst game yet. And I don't know what the reasons, we're not in the locker room. We can't really pinpoint that. But I feel like the mindset of the two teams was markedly different. Montreal had an attitude where they were playing without fear. And part of that is from where they came from, being down 3-1. And part of that is the expectations on the Leafs. But that, at the end of the day, is the job. There's lots of teams that are coming into the playoffs with expectations and performing.
You talk about the mindset and the approach, you know, that Toronto group from management right on through the players does not lack confidence or swagger. And sometimes I wish there was a little bit more humility, more let's play a little bit below the radar and get it done. There was none of that swagger in game seven. And I don't know where it went, but there, that confidence that's always been around that group was not to be seen. Could you feel that?
I definitely feel that. Yeah. I mean, again, game seven for me was the most evident. And, you know, you look, especially when they got down those two goals, there was still plenty of time to come back, but it got worse. They looked disorganized and it just looked like there was meltdown happening. And it was really hard to watch, to be honest, because you expect so much from this team, and they've worked so hard to get to where they are. And, you know, they're the ones that earned those expectations. They it wasn't, you know, just given to them. They earned it through good play, and all the players on that team deserve credit for that. But the way it unfolded in the end was definitely difficult to watch.
Okay, you played for both teams. Interesting, like you with being you in your heart, in your mind, calling that game.
Yeah, I mean, I was very excited to call the game just because I have so much appreciation for the history of hockey and two teams that are such storied rivals. I played for both teams. I've been in the locker room of both teams. I've looked up, you know, at the ceiling with the, you know, the torch Spiors to hold it high in Montreal. And I've been in the Leaf locker room. I grew up in Toronto. And
yeah.
To have an epic, to have the series turn out to be a game seven, you know, where I don't have a vested interest, was fun for me to be a part of. And it was historic in all sorts of ways, the comeback, the collapse. So it was a fun thing to be a part of as a rookie broadcaster, for sure.
Like, there's only been two of them in 105 years or 103
years. That's
great.
Hard to imagine, right? I guess the Leafs were in the West for such a long time, right? And then I don't know when the seven-game format came along, but it is shocking that there's only been that many.
I would have thought that, like, at some point during the original six, they played again seven gamers, like a couple of them along the way.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was born. Hey, did you ever have did it feel different to wear, and be careful because family and friends watching, but did it feel different playing at home in Montreal as opposed to home in Toronto, kind of thing?
There's definitely a different vibe in the buildings. I don't know how to articulate that necessarily. But I think the history is maybe a bit more tangible in Montreal. You can really feel the banners and you can really feel the torch there. And they do such a good job of incorporating that history into, you know, when the players come on the ice and you know, there's something about that Bell Center crowd that is special, especially come playoff time. And, you know, unfortunately, in Montreal, we went to the conference finals. We upset the President's Trophy winners in the first round. We beat Pittsburgh, the defending Stanley Cup champions, in the second round. You know, so that was a memorable spring for me. Unfortunately, in Toronto, my first go around there, we didn't make the playoffs. And the second go around there, we lost in the first round, and I wasn't really a part of the playoff series. I was scratched for a lot of those games. So hard to compare them in terms of the playoff experience for me. My Leaf playoff experience mostly come down to rooting on Doug Gilmore in 1993 as a kid and just being all in on those days. So
What did you see when you look back on, I didn't realize that you were part of four different teams that came back from 3-1 down. Was there a commonality on those teams or a familiar thread on the teams that you came back from against?
Yeah. So, I mean, every story is a bit different, but I felt like the common theme was that if you just win that one game, you know, if you're able to put out of your mind the fact that you need three, and you can just win one, well, everything changes, because then the next game comes up and you just need to win one again. And then in game seven, I felt like every time, you know, we had the advantage because the other team had everything to lose and we had nothing to lose. And that's a great mindset to play from. So yeah, that's the common experience, I think, through all those four series, but every one of them was a little bit different in terms of how they played out. One was against Washington when I was with Montreal. The second one was when I was with Tampa against Pittsburgh. There was another one against Pittsburgh, which was, I think, 2014 with the Rangers. And then I'm blanking on the last one, but I think it might have been
San Jose.
No, it wasn't that. It was another Rangers. So I don't know why I'm blanking on it, but it was either 14 or 15. One of those two. So I'll have to try and remember.
I think it's amazing. And the teams that you beat, I mean, you beat good teams to come back from. It's not like you had some dark horse that was just happened to get up in a series. Like, it's good clubs.
Yeah, it was, you know, in 2010 with Montreal, Yaro Halak stood on his head, and that was an incredible effort from him. And we just had a ragtag group of guys that somehow came together. Camilleri got hot. You know, we had Gomez and, you know, Spacek, and just an eclectic group of guys that came together. The next year, you know, or 2011 with Tampa, it was kind of like, I don't know, we got down, you know, early, and Pittsburgh got an OT win, I think, early in the series. And I felt like they felt like they had us. And we had a resourceful team. We had Dwayne Rolison got hot, and we had some talented forwards up front, and we just got on a roll, and we felt invincible after that. We ended up sweeping Washington the next round because we were so hot. That's what I'm talking about in terms of Montreal going into the second round,
right,
with that, you know, can't lose mentality. So yeah, I mean, good memories, and it's a matter of you think you're out, and then you kind of have to face that. You have to face that question. And then you know, sometimes you start the playoffs with this, like, you've got everything to lose and there's pressure and, you know, you play tight. And then when you face the fact that you might be out tomorrow, then maybe you just let go and play the game that you're kind of trained to play.
So now Montreal, Winnipeg will face the winner of Colorado and Vegas. We know that. That just seems like it's going to be another big challenge, whoever gets through against whoever survives out of the West. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. You've watched enough of the North to know how that style is, and you've watched all of the East, Central, and the West. I mean, it looks like they played two different styles for most of the year, but Winnipeg and Montreal kind of were were the closest to what we're seeing down in the States?
I think that's bang on. Yeah, I think the Winnipeg and Montreal have played the closest to a playoff style. And here we are, they're through to the second round. I would say it's completely unpredictable at this point. Yeah. Everyone that's writing off the North, hey, I'm not getting ahead of myself, especially when you know, we don't know the way these series will play out. Maybe one team will get into the conference finals exhausted or banged up or have some injuries. So, you know, and Colorado looked like a juggernaut, but let's not count Vegas out quite yet. They, you know, they've proven themselves to be resilient. Fleury's going to be back in there doing his thing. But boy, does Colorado look good with Cale Makar and their skill set and the way they move the puck. They're going to be a tough for anyone to deal with.
That turbo boost button that Nathan McKinnon
has. The turbo
boost,
exactly. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah,
to physically on your TV be able to watch somebody go like that, and we all have context, and you're not supposed to be able to do that.
But you know you see so often is that those guys like McKinnon that get the puck, they get in Colorado, they get set up through the neutral zone with speed by the Makars and the Sammy Girards. Like, someone's got to put the puck on their tape flying through the neutral zone. And those guys do such a good job. Devon Taves. So, you know, we take for granted that it's just the McKinnon skill set that is doing it, but it's always a team game. And I think those puck moving D play a huge role in making those guys look so good.
Hey, is it hard passing to a guy that's really fast? I asked that question in all seriousness because you judge it differently, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, obviously in practice you get used to the pace at which guys play with. But there's no doubt sometimes you underestimate the speed of a guy and throw it in his feet.
Why are you passing it behind me? I'm trying to indirect pass. That's what I'm doing. Don't worry about it.
Well, we're on the chirp. So one of the chirps you have in practice is if you overpass a guy, you put it too far in front, you chirp his slow foot speed. So it's not your fault. It's his for being slow.
You can't give a bad player or a good player a bad pass. I'll get
exactly the
phrasing right. Hey, listen, you're doing this. You're doing studio. You're doing game action. Give me what you like about both sides.
Yeah, both have been awesome, and it's been fun to be a part of, especially in the playoffs. You know, I love the playoff atmosphere, and you know, I just don't have to worry about waking up really sore the next day. I'm still a part of all the action, so you know, both are fun. You know, the thing about doing the studio is that you're kind of these short bursts and just quick hits, and you kind of have to know the pulse of everything that's going on around the league. Versus the color, you can really dive into the rhythm of the game and get deep into it that way and be a part of the series. So I've been really enjoying both, and I'm grateful that I've gotten the opportunity to be a part of it here.
How long have you been doing it now?
This is my first season.
So you didn't do anything last year? I thought you did something.
No. This is first season doing this.
Okay. Not everybody gets to do Montreal, Toronto. You know that.
Yeah,
like
sorry, just
oh no, not everybody gets to do Montreal Toronto game seven in their first year.
I know. I'm so sorry. I had another call came in a second ago. No, I'm fully appreciative and grateful for the opportunity that I've been given to be a part of this. And John McGinnis at NBC has put a lot of faith in me, and I owe John a lot. So it's been so much fun to be a part of. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to the second round to watch these teams. It's a shame we can't go up to Montreal and Winnipeg to be there in person at these arenas. And to be honest, there's something lost about the broadcast. And, you know, we're calling it off of a monitor in Stamford, Connecticut, which we're grateful to be able to do that at all. So it's not a complaint in any way, but, you know, definitely not being a part of the action and not being able to see the whole ice and stuff. There's something lost there.
Do you look at your phone after a segment or when you go to commercial break when you're calling the game, or do you leave that away?
For the most part, I try to focus on the task at hand, but
I look at mine all the time. I try, but I always look at my phone. Like, I screwed that up. Or usually it's I said something and the audience isn't happy with my take or something along that line. The worst is when you get a call from a manager or a coach going, you can't say that about my team. Have any of that happened?
No, not yet. Thankfully.
Good for you.
But, I'm sure it'll come, but I had someone chirping me that I was pronouncing Jason Spezza's name wrong. So, and you know, I know Spets really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's never informed me that I was pronouncing his name wrong, but people were really, really irritated by it.
I do that all the time with Evgeny Malkin, and it just drives people crazy. So I just kept doing it. That's just screw him. This has been a lot of fun. 15-month-old little baby girl. Make sure you take care of her. And this playoff, it's pretty cool once you get into it. I know you did it all season, but I didn't realize it was just your first year. I thought we went back a year with you. Yeah. That's pretty neat on your side. So keep it going, pal. You're really good at it. Really impressive that you're doing this, bouncing back and forth between studio and calling games.
Well, thanks so much, Darren. It's fun to be a part of this broadcast world now with you, and it's great to catch up with you today. Thanks for having me.
Just in saying goodbye to Dom, he wanted to pass along hello to Vegas Golden Knights TV play-by-play voice, Dave Gosher. They were together, got to know each other when they were both working with the Boston Bruins. Dom was a player and Gosh was a radio play-by-play voice. And they would get together and discuss music, in particular Springsteen. And if you don't know Dave Gosher, very talented individual, incredibly gifted, and he loves hockey, but is just fascinated by music. And it's to the point where you bring up a song to Dave Gosher, he will immediately go album name and the year that it was recorded. It's both bizarre and impressive all at the same time. And that's not the only time that I've ever used that saying with Dave Gosher. Bizarre and impressive. He's an awesome dude, and I'm not surprised that a cool guy like Dominic Moore would be connected to Dave Gosher. And Gosh and Moore share that experience. They talk about broadcasting. They talk about hockey. They talk about success. And if you're going to do all of that, you get around to Olympic champions and the chase of the Stanley Cup. And we bring that together with our good friend, Megan Duggan, Olympic and world champion. Now, that'll get your attention right off the bat. She is also been recently hired by the New Jersey Devils as manager of player development. This is an interview that we recorded last week. Really excited to bring it to you because with Megan, we talk books, we talk plants. Stick around for that. We'll also talk about our children and, of course, playing and coaching the game. Here's Megs on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
I'm curious. Now, this is so off the wall, but what's your nickname? Because I was talking to somebody the other day, and I threw out Megs, and then I thought, no, that can't be that. Like, you've got a tailor-made name for nicknames.
You think?
Yeah.
I've had a variety of them, I guess. Megs is definitely a staple, I would say. A lot of my close friends call me Megs. Obviously, Doug's was a big one, you know, in my earlier career. And then now I think a lot of people just call me Megan. I have an older brother, too. And he was always kind of Doug's all growing up and stuff like that. He was like the senior Doug's. So maybe that's why that one didn't stick as much. But yeah, Doug's and Meg's.
Both, I was thinking Doogie, too. That one's ever going to get on the radar or what?
I've heard that. That's not a staple. Maybe because I don't like it as much. But I was gonna say, I've heard that.
You ever reject any?
I don't know. I guess the way everyone rejects nicknames, like no thanks. I don't know.
Why did you decide to retire?
Gosh, I think for me it was just like a gut feeling. Really, I've lived kind of my whole career, kind of with my heart and soul. And it was just the timing felt right for a variety of reasons, things going on in my life. And it was just, it was just the way that I felt. I was moved to make the decision, and it was one I was at peace with and excited about and felt really good about.
Did you have this job in mind when you retired?
This job specifically? No, I didn't. It's I feel like I'm still kind of pinching myself now because it feels like such a wonderful opportunity. But when I retired, I really was looking forward to just the time and the space to think through what that next step would be and how I could continue to have an impact in hockey. And that's really what I thought through and kind of was processing a little bit throughout the fall and winter and early spring, which certainly led me to some of the conversations I was having with New Jersey. No, I definitely didn't have this specific role in mind, and I'm thrilled for it, as you can imagine.
Hey, would you have retired if there wasn't a pandemic, if life was normal and continuing on, or did that play a role?
No, I think so. I don't know. It's hard to say, right? I think it's changed all of our lives in so many capacities, whether it's personally or professionally, or change perspectives on things. I'm a new mom, and I had a baby right before the pandemic. So that took up certainly a lot of my time, but I don't know. It's hard to say. Like I said, it was just the right decision for me for a variety of reasons. It felt right. And I was thrilled to make it and really at peace with it.
Where's baby right now?
We have a nanny that helps us out during the day when we're working. So yes. I think right now he's napping. He loves spending some quality time with her during the days when we're working as well.
I just wasn't sure whether we should be whispering or not because sleep is important.
It sure is. Yeah.
Who approached who?
Really, like, the conversations kind of came about pretty organically. My initial conversation, I had reached out to Kate Madigan just to connect and learn some things about the organization. And then it was, like I said, it was kind of organically looped in with some other members of their staff. And we spent a few calls getting to know each other and learning a little bit about, they could learn a little bit about who I was and what, where I could add value. And it just, seemed like a good fit.
What does manager of player development mean?
I think what's exciting is really the role and the opportunity that I've been presented with. It kind of affords me a unique opportunity to have a lot of touch points in a variety of different areas in development. I think there's certainly some opportunities for growth under some excellent leadership there in New Jersey, and really just kind of having touch points and looking at all things player development, right? On the ice, off the ice, mentally, physically, those types of things. So I'm excited. I've already kind of hit the ground running a little bit and trying to digest a lot of information and figure out where I can add value.
So what have you done when you say you've hit the ground running?
I'm just trying to figure out the lay of the land a little bit. You know, who's who, staff, players, those types of things. Understand the lingo, right? Nicknames, as we were talking about earlier. Hockey is a world of nicknames. So when I'm trying to understand who players are, who people are, and I'm looking at, you know, first and last name, and someone has a nickname for them that doesn't quite match. It's those types of things right now. And, you know, all different types of onboarding and things like that.
How much will you get on the ice with the athletes?
I hope that's certainly a component of it. My plan is to join the Devils staff in on ice development throughout the year in whatever capacity they need. And really just find whatever ways I can add to the team, right? I've been a part of teams my whole life. I love collaboration. I love relationships, working together as a group. And so I'm going to do whatever is asked in those capacities.
A coach that maybe you lean on in the experiences over the years that you can sort of channel some of that that experience with?
Like a coach that I've had?
Yeah.
A coach that played such a crucial and pivotal role in my career was Mark Johnson, when I played for him at the University of Wisconsin. For me back then as a kid, obviously, wanted to play collegiately, wanted to play for Team USA. And at that point, you know, who better to learn from in that regard? So he really just challenged me to grow as a player every single day when I showed up at the rink, but also as a person, you know. And he's such a strong leader, quiet leader, led by example. Obviously, he would be out on the ice and he'd be skating around. He'd say, "Hey, you know, do it like this, X, Y, and Z," and then he'd jump in on a drill and he'd score five goals when all of us have been, you know, struggling to score goals all practice. So. just a great guy. You know, I've leaned on in small ways over the years, asked questions to him, bumped into him along the way, and obviously still follow the Badger women closely, and what he's done there as a leader and a coach, in all areas is remarkable. So he's someone I can only, kind of aspire to model.
You watching Cole Caulfield?
Definitely. Yeah. He's been, there's something about that, like Badger connection, you know, that Badger vibe, whether it's hockey, football, basketball. We somehow keep tabs on all of the players, both male and female, in a variety of sports that kind of excel after their collegiate career. So he's been fun to watch. He's a really great player to watch. I'm not a Habs fan, you know, I might get eaten out saying that, but big, you know, I'm half Toronto family over here with my wife and her family and their roots. So, he's fun to watch. And I think the other night we were watching one of the games, and actually prior to playoffs starting, we were watching when he had a couple of games in, and I said, "Oh, you know," however I vocalized excitement around something he did. My wife elbowed me on the couch. She's like, "You're not cheering for them, are you?"
No, those run deep. Those roots run deep.
Big time. Yeah. Yeah. So, but no, it's, he's been a fun player to watch and certainly, you know, love having that Badger connection.
So where do you think your influence will be on player development, in trying to get the players to the next level?
I think, you know, first of all, being able to relate to some of the players, you know, certainly, New Jersey has a young team, lots on the horizon for the team, but a lot of areas of development that I'm sure they want to put an emphasis on. So, just recently retiring, playing the game at an elite level for a long time, being able to relate to the players and in that sense. And, obviously had a variety of different experiences in my career, highs, low lows, faced a lot of adversity. And so being able to shed some light in those areas, I'm hopeful I can do that as well.
Are there places that the women's game can influence the National Hockey League?
I hope so. And that's, mm-hmm. that's what I'm here to find out. And that's, you know, kudos to the Devils organization, I think, for really starting to diversify their staff and who they have and what types of backgrounds and perspectives they value. Because I do think there's something to be said about, yeah, the sport is the same, right? But there mm-hmm. are different, different perspectives and different experiences on the men's and women's side. And so I'm hopeful to be able to take what I've learned throughout my career and maybe things that we experience that aren't seen on the men's side that can somehow add value. So it'll be fun to kind of, you know, go through that and figure out all of that in the next little bit.
Do you think your role will be as much mental as it will be physical, or am I overstating that?
I think like I said, it can have touch points in a variety of areas. You know, I think when you think about player development in general at all levels, there's so many different components that go into it. And I've certainly learned that throughout my career and how I've had to evolve and change and different levels of myself I've had to tap into. So I'm hoping to be able to bring some of that to the group.
When you finally get on the, do you know when you're going to get on the ice with players?
No. I don't know right now. Obviously a lot going on, I think, with COVID and you know, all the things, but at some point.
Do you have a favorite drill? Or a drill that you'll never do again?
I'm a big, I like battle drills, you know, mm-hmm. like playing tough down low, like being physical, you know, battling to try to get position and get to the net, like little one-on-ones out of the corners, things like that. Maybe because I was a, you know, bigger player on the women's side, that was always, you know, being physical and competitive, and that was always part of my game. So I enjoyed drills like that. And certainly, you know, there's a lot of that in the National Hockey League. So,
did anybody else talk to you, or just New Jersey? I know you made the initial reach out, but I'm curious how much conversation there was around the league.
Yeah, I was having some just informational discussions with, you know, people I either had crossed paths with throughout my career, or you know, kind of had had a relationship with, or who I, you know, highly respected in the league, and more so, like I said, just casual, like just trying to understand landscape, trying to understand, you know, get some advice on just general advice on trying to start a career in the National Hockey League and things like that.
Do you think this is going to become the norm? We've seen it on a few fronts now.
Yeah, I was talking to someone the other day, actually, and the way they presented it and kind of how we were talking through it was it two ways. One, I look forward to a day when it's not a story, right? Mm-hmm. When it's not a story that a woman, you know, or someone else from an underrepresented group in hockey, someone from the BIPOC community, gets a position with an NHL club. But at the same time, I think the representation and having conversations about it and being able to be on this podcast today and have a chat with you, I think that is important too. You know, at this point and where we're at for young girls to say, hey, oh my gosh, like maybe like I could do that. You know, I'd always dreamed about working in sports or a sports business or whatever it might be, hockey operations. So I think the representation is important. And I hope that it's trending that way. I think it's good business, like in anything, right? It's a winning proposition to bring in any business or any industry, to bring people from different backgrounds together to work towards a goal, because you see different things and you bring a different perspective. So I hope so, because like I said, I think it's a winning proposition.
I'm not sure how to phrase this, and I don't want to get myself into trouble, but when a woman will talk to a male player, National Hockey League or American Hockey League player, do you think you have their attention a little bit more, that it's just different, unique, and just probably nothing that they've ever gone through before?
Yeah, totally. And it's going to be new. It's going to be an adjustment. But again, I think, I think players that welcome and value that and see it as potentially impactful on their career, those are the players you want to be around.
Right.
And to me, those are the players you want as a part of your organization. And, you know, a coach is a coach. And so I think, like to your point, it could be a transition period. It might not be. I think, in my experience, I've had male coaches, I've had female coaches, and if the coach knows what they're talking about, you know, they, you can trust them, you build a relationship with them, they provide value to you as an athlete. That's what's important. And, you know, I'm excited to start to get to know a lot of the players and communicate with them and build relationships and trust with them. And because I think it could be a good fit.
I've never thought of you as ever being nervous, even on the biggest stage. I just thought of you as like the coolest, like ice water running through your veins. So, but do you think you'll have some butterflies the first time that you get together with the athletes?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think what I've always learned in my career, and I've definitely had butterflies and nerves along the way, but what I've learned is, you know, when you feel those types of things, that means like what you're doing is important, right? And it matters to you. You know, I don't get butterflies when I'm like unloading the dishwasher because like, who cares, right? But it's like, you know, when you're working with athletes, when you're passionate about development, when you're playing in a gold medal game, those things matter. They're really important. And so I think that, you know, the butterflies are just a reminder of like, hey, this means something to me. And I'm excited about this. And so just, you know, I had to learn how to deal with those over the years. And certainly, you know, being able to perform under pressure and all of that is part of being an elite athlete. But yeah, I mean, I think I'll feel different things, but it's because it matters to me and I want to make an impact and I want to add value. And so probably that's where it comes from.
Who have you talked to the most in the organization? Because you've got Marty, you got Fitzy, you got a bunch of people. Here I go with the nicknames, but
exactly.
Who have you talked to the most?
So I'm going to be working really closely with assistant GM Dan McKinnon, across, you know, a lot of levels. So he's certainly been a contact point, as well as, you know, Kate Madigan and Tom Fitzgerald, as I get up to speed with the role. And, but really, like I said, these next couple of weeks are going to be about connecting with everyone in the organization and building a relationship and finding out how we can work together and, you know, kind of what everyone's working on right now.
Do you call the athletes? Will you have those? Because when a coach takes over, like a head coach, he'll usually reach out and talk to different players on the team. Do you do that same thing or do you wait until you meet them in person?
This is new for me, so I have to figure that out. But
see, that's why I ask these questions. I'm trying to guide you along, Megs. You know.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of my top priorities. I'm really looking forward to knowing and understanding the players and building relationships with them. I think a lot of development is about trust and, you know, really knowing each other and creating a great rapport. So I'm excited, in the near future to make those connections, whether they're virtually or in person. Who knows these days, but I'm excited to get that going.
What did you want to ask and have answered from the New Jersey Devils to make you want to do this job?
I mean, I was sold, right? Like, yeah. I mean, this is such a great opportunity. And I think what excites me most or excited me most about the role through some of my conversations, you know, with Tom and Dan and Kate was, like I said earlier, one, how much is really on the horizon for this young team and this organization, and being a part of that is just, again, it's exciting. It's energizing. But also, you really get to know people early on through first impressions, and it just seems like they're just an awesome group, you know. And I think our belief systems align, and you know, emphasis on culture and you know, how they value relationships and communication, like those things are so important to me. And you know, those are some of the things that you know, I say sold me right away. It's like I didn't even need selling, you know. I'm thrilled for the opportunity.
You have a business card yet?
No, I don't. Not yet.
I don't. People probably don't even use business cards anymore.
But I know. I was going to say, still, do people?
Yeah, it's still kind of neat to have that little logo and something on it.
Yeah.
You've been part of teams, both in college and national teams, but this is a little different. Did you watch the games with renewed vigor down the stretch when this was coming together? New Jersey games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always dialed in on hockey. We watch every night, any of the games that we can. You know, we're watching all the playoff games right now. So, yeah, I think, you know, when I see right now, like see clips of New Jersey or, you know, watch anything from this past season. Like it excites me. It's being part of something, right? It's what I mentioned earlier, like being a part of something that matters and where you can have value and, or add value. And so definitely, you know, I'm energized and excited for the opportunity and certainly excited to be a part of the Devils family.
Is Jill walking around the house right now?
Yeah. She wasn't here. She wasn't here when we first started. We were sharing an office right now. Yeah. But she's, I don't know. She's working in the kitchen or something.
A couple of things, just some fun. What's the name of the plant behind you? Do you have the name?
Oh, that one? No. I don't know the name of that one, but I have one on the other side of the room, much bigger. Its name is Tank.
Its name's Tank?
Yep.
Love it. And what's in the bookshelf? Give me an idea of what we're reading here.
One of my favorites here, I'll give them a little plug, but two of my teammates, Jocelyn and Monique Lamoureux, wrote a book this year. Yeah, so it's called Dare to Make History, Chasing a Dream and Fighting for Equality. So great book on just their story as athletes, our team, everything we went through in our equity fight. And yeah, pretty impressive. I mean, it's like a 300-page hardcover book, so it's one of my favorites. What else is on there? I got Bobby Orr's book in there. Yeah, a lot of hockey stuff in there. Captain Class, which is a good one.
What's the favorite book that you've read that you might reread?
One of my favorite books I read great question. I might reread. I was thinking about it recently is Grit by Angela Duckworth. Mm. I don't know if you know that one, but really good. It is what it kind of says, grit.
Yeah.
Like it's a mindset book, but can be applied. I used it, you know, read it leading into the 2018 games, but feel like I could revisit it just looking at things through a different lens now in a new role and a new spot in my life. But yeah, it's a really good one.
Do you highlight books when you go through them?
I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah, highlight. I'm a big note taker, so I get notebooks and journals everywhere. My teammates used to give me a hard time for it.
Really?
Yeah.
One more thing before I let you go, an early incarnation of this podcast back when I was living in Toronto, I talked to Haley, when she was working with Toronto. We happened to meet at a Marley's practice and she came up after the workout, but my daughters were there and we adopted our kids when they were both four. So this would have been, one would have been five and one would have been eight. And they were amazed when they saw Haley on the ice. With the men's players, and they could care less, Megan, about hockey. But what blew them away was that there was a girl on the ice, and I think that this opportunity that you have, even though we want to get to where it's normal, and it's not a story, it's still so inspiring to even girls that don't want to play hockey to be able to realize that. And I wanted to relate that story to you.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you sharing that. And I think that's to my point earlier when I said, you know, it was a two-part answer. I do look forward to the day where it's not a story because how much growth that will show in our society and in our sport. But the representation right now and the visibility and that see it, be it mentality is so important, you know, for young girls to be able to see, oh, look at those women out there. I can do that. For young boys to be able to see, you know, it's not all about men at the top in hockey,
right.
You know? And so I agree with you completely. That's a really important visual. And an important aspect of this.
And one other thing, the idea that the New Jersey Devils go down this path, but also with their goalie department, you'd be aware of this, but they've expanded that thing and blown it wide open. So this is a pretty forward-thinking organization right now.
Yeah, it seems like it. Those are the teams and the groups and the organizations I want to be a part of, is those with forward-thinking mentality. So I'm thrilled, as you can imagine.
Is that a New Jersey Devils red shirt that you have on, or just coincidence?
It's actually pink, but maybe the coloring looks like it. Yeah. But yeah, sure. Yeah. It's a New Jersey Devils.
Thanks for doing this. We've been chomping at the bit to get you on since we heard this week. There was kind of some rumblings coming down the pipe that this was going to happen, but really appreciate your time. Say hi to Jill and congratulations. Can't wait to see what influence you have on this great young crop of players.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
The background. The background fascinates me in all of these conversations. Now, Dom's getting through. He's in a hotel right now as he goes through the Stanley Cup playoffs. So there wasn't much there. But if you've got something in the background, even a little plant like there was behind Megan, I will ask you about it. And then we the book, of course. But Tank. We have to get a picture of Tank. I don't know why I didn't get her to flip the camera around there. Got to run. This week's episode of The Chirp, like every episode of The Chirp podcast with Darren Millard, is a production of NHL Studios under the direction of the esteemed Bob Bender. He's the one that pulls it all together, and I can't thank him enough. Did you like this podcast? If you haven't, please do it. Do it for Bob. Do it for Robert Bob Bender. I urge you for that because he doesn't get enough credit, and I'd like him to really have the accolades fall down on her shoulder. What is ahead? I can tell you that next week, I have no idea what we're going to be talking about because we're into this run of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Who's going to make a statement in the second round of the postseason, working our way towards the first crossover point of the season? Thanks for listening, and thanks for being part of the Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.